power of our diplomacy. Diplomacy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a really big deal.
The strength of our diplomacy.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun.
One. Deadline.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a very special 13th episode.
Spooky. Yeah.
13th episode, recorded at least partially on Friday the 13th.
I am freaked the hell out right now.
Are you?
I mean, seriously, I can't even see my hands.
Yeah, this is just going to freak you out.
My face is numb.
Of Diplomacy Cast. Diplomacy Cast is a podcast about the board game Diplomacy. I'm Eric, he's Nathan.
Hey!
Yo, whoa.
Really?
Hey!
I don't know. It's okay. Funny. It's the thing that came to mind at the moment. I've been watching a lot of Jersey Shore.
Oh, that... Really?
No.
Wow.
I'm lying. Totally lying.
No, dude, I can't hang out tonight. I have homework.
By homework, I mean Jersey Shore.
Yeah. In today's episode, it's going to be another all-listener, all-the-time mailbag, super fun... extravaganza. I'm out.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, to be fair, I'm working on LAC, and so we have a lot of things in the hopper.
Well, okay, but we've been grossly negligent toward our listeners.
And oh, yeah, so that's because you couldn't find the emails.
I'm not very smart. We're going to respond to, a couple of months of piled up email,
yeah.
To be very honest, our very favorites that we've received. And then we're going to be joined by Melissa Pox. Uh-oh.
Nicholson.
Still?
Nope, call.
Call, yeah. I was about to say her name.
It used to be Nicholson.
Yep. If you have any questions, any feedback, please email us, press@diplomacycast.com.
Do it.
Oh, and subscribe to us on iTunes. Before we dig into the mailbag for the day, it's not really a bag.
No, because they're emails.
Yeah, I might be better off with a bag, all things considered.
Yeah, we can print them out and put them in a bag if you want.
That'd be super. I'll talk
to the props department.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks. Perfect. We wanted to get another WAC update because, as our longtime listeners will know, this show is secretly just a long infomercial for WAC.
You know, that's not fair, but it is on my mind a lot, so I do talk about it. But it's coming up. You know, it's the 27th through the 29th of January, like 2 weeks.
27th through the 29th of January. This episode will presumably be up on the internet before then.
Yeah.
So you're listening to this and you're like, what the hell? I gotta get down there right now.
Yeah, it's gonna be good. We're past 7 boards, so it's
7.
Yeah, that's good. That's good for WAC. That's good for a DIPCON, really.
That's 49 grown-ups in a room playing Diplomacy.
Yeah, yeah. So hoping to get some more. So if anybody happens to want to make a last minute flight. Or just drive out to downtown Seattle, drop us a line, let me know.
Yeah. Press@diplomacycast.com if you need details. And I keep meaning to put them up on the website.
Yeah, now there's 2 weeks left. You thought maybe you would just put them up. Details coming soon, like day of.
Yes, I am awesome. anything else?
Other than, great turnout and some of the best players in the nation, many of whom we've actually interviewed on this particular podcast are going to be there. It's... really, I don't see... I mean, obviously, WDC is going to be just... would be the only thing comparable this year that's going to happen. That's going to be big. So
it's going to be a blast.
It's going to be really good.
Don't miss it. $20.
Yeah, it's only... it's $20. It's pretty epic. So,
and if you order now, we're going to give you a tote bag.
Actually, pearl necklace.
Gross.
Hot off the press?
Hot off the press?
Yeah, there's people don't use a press anymore.
Drop it like it's hot.
Oh, so if we just dropped it like it was hot...
If we just dropped it like it was hot, you can do better than that. Drop it like it's hot. Off the press.
I'm not saying that.
Alright, cool.
See what's in the mailbag. Oh, here's one.
That was so lame.
Okay, our props department is a little under budget.
That was my garbage bag. Our first email comes so long ago that he probably forgot that he wrote it, but from Alex, our friend Alex in Alaska.
Oh.
He writes, "Hey Eric, hope you're well." He doesn't really care about Nathan.
Yeah, because they don't
think to me.
Oh yeah, well. Hey.
I was re-listening to the episode on Germany, and you and Nathan mention an opening by someone you know involving moving Munich to Bohemia, but you don't go into detail because it's such a silly idea. Fair enough, it is a crazy idea, but what is the idea? I love wild and crazy ideas, and I would really like to know.
Oh,
that is the kind of email I love right there. Mm-hmm. Like, let's talk about something silly about diplomacy.
Mm-hmm. Well, that particular opening I've seen a number of times. A number of times?
Yeah. I've seen it maybe once.
Yeah. There's only one time that I've seen it work, which is what we were talking about in that episode, and that's when Jerry did that to me at some house game many, many years ago.
I see.
I obviously was Austria, and Jerry was Germany. So what's the crazy thing? So the idea behind it, which is a poor one, is that, you know, everyone's going to pile on Austria anyway. Maybe Germany should get a slice of pie pretty early. If you'd like to guarantee Austria's going to get out of the game, go ahead and drop down.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly. Bohemia. I could see it as one of those things where there's, like, a special tournament situation, maybe, where, the poor guy who's playing Austria is just, like, the board needs the guy to just die. If, for example, France is like so, if you're playing Germany and your France is so like, I'll do anything you want, just do this opening, and you really believe him for some reason, you know, if for, let's say France is one tournament leader and Austria is the other tournament leader, and you want to help France for some reason, or you just want him to stay off your back, and you just and he's like, hey, Munich to Bohemia, do it. It'll be awesome, and I'll leave you alone, and you'll be my friend for the rest of the game. Like, if you really feel like there's just going to be like so little Western pressure for some reason,
right? I mean, like the long story short is tactically there is zero reason to do it. There is no tactical justification for moving into Bohemia.
But
there's people.
Yeah.
There's a people question. And if you know the players and they know the situation or you know something, you could justify it that way.
Yeah.
But there's really nothing beyond that, by the way. There's no plan beyond that. It's just the move.
Tactically, it's total weak sauce because, I mean, what are you going to take? And more importantly, what are you possibly going to keep that you'd ever take?
It's awful.
I mean, you border, what, Vienna and that's all, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Trieste doesn't border that, does it?
No, I don't think so. Let me double check. Is it Budapest?
At least in Tyrolia, you're bordering three dots that you can't keep if you happen to take one of them. But, yeah.
I mean, the crux of Alex's question is, oh, what's the thing? There is no thing. That's it. It's just the move, which, you know, it's... Because of the positioning on the board, it is immediately going over the line.
Yeah.
And it just, doesn't break the game, but it sort of like throws everything off kilter. So that's it. But it can be pretty, I don't want to say powerful, because that implies that it will do something good, but it has reverberating effects.
I would say on a board full of strangers, if you're the guy who just shows up and just does that to be wacky, usually the strangers will be like, whoa, this guy's out of his mind, let's just go kill him.
Yeah.
Like, if you really know your situation, or you're, like, so much more experienced than everybody else that you just want to, like, do something stupid because it looks fun and you don't think that people are going to react to it, go for it. But just understand that it's silly.
Yeah. And you might as well, it's the equivalent of like jumping off a building. I mean, like, it's just
Pull any punches. I suppose. But I love talking about stuff like that anyway. Like, I could totally draw up a situation in my head where I'd really write Munich to Bohemia, but, you know, probably not at a tournament, probably not when I was trying to win.
Yeah,
you know?
No.
Unless it was like a top board where everything is weird. But, you know.
There are player and tournaments and game setting situations you can come up with, but there's no tactical one.
Yeah. If you wanted to like do something weird like that to mess up a board, like at least go Munich to Silesia.
Yeah.
At least there's like a little leverage there, you know. But don't
sure follow up with Berlin to Prussia.
Yeah.
Because go big or go home.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's move it. Where's the bag?
I'm putting that away. No more with the bag. Okay, Bernard in the Netherlands, our contest winner and now regular listener.
He gets on the Facebooks.
Yeah, he does. He does. Bernard in the Netherlands. Hi, guys. Looking forward to your next episode. Just wanted to say, I don't know when he wrote that. There probably was one since then, but thanks. Just wanted to say that in no small measure influenced by your podcasts and the attention to face-to-face tournaments in them, I've decided to fly out to England for EuroDipCon in just over a week. Did that already happen?
Yeah, it already happened.
Thought you'd be pleased to hear that you're doing good for the hobby throughout the world, assuming I'm not the only one getting enthusiastic about tournament play. I have played face-to-face in the past, but just house games, wondering what I'm up against.
Well, I would actually,
At Eurodip?
Yeah, I'd be
feeling the same way right now.
You know?
But,
I think not only, it's awesome, Bernard, that you're going to these things, and if I'm sure that we've inspired other people, but if you're the only one who inspired, mission accomplished.
Yeah, we saved just one soul.
Exactly. It's what we're here for, and I'm really glad that you're going to try it out. But here's really why we're reading this email. Would really love to hear how this went for you.
Yeah.
Whether you want to drop us a line, if it was an amazing experience, drop us a line. Maybe we'll have you on. We'll talk about it.
Yeah. Truth is, we don't hear enough about the things that do happen in Europe, and I know that they're bigger and more awesome than the things that happen here, at least some of the time.
Is it bigger and more awesome?
Well, I think a lot of people show up at them. That's all I'm saying.
It doesn't make it more awesome. Just saying.
Yeah, it's true.
I've been to some of those events.
It is full of French people and stuff.
Often, yes.
Yeah.
Well, they're nice. I like the French.
Yeah. Hi, the French.
Really? Yeah. Hi, the French.
Hi, the French. Yes. There's your shout out.
You're a classy guy.
France. Yeah.
Classy guy. So, yes, Bernard, drop us a line. Let us know how it goes, and good luck to you.
Yes. Mitchell writes, I'm listening to the Builds podcast at the moment, and I wanted to get your input on something that has actually already happened to me. I was playing with some buddies of mine, and something a bit odd happened. I opened Venice to Tirolia, Rome to Venice, Naples to the Ionian. Okay, the Nathan aggressive, whatever.
We'll call it the Nathan special.
Yeah, sure.
Played Mitchell, by the way. Yes. Strong.
All the moves went through unbounced, and I told Austria that I was going for the German because I felt like doing something new. I ordered Tirolia to Budapest, Venice to Trieste. Tirolia to Vienna is probably what it means. I hope you didn't order Tirolia to Budapest.
Well, I believe there. Do you not know that there's a tunnel?
Oh, hush.
Between Tirolia. It's a mountain tunnel.
Stop it. Tirolia to Budapest, Venice to Trieste, Ionian to the. Well, okay. He gets three builds. That's the point of his story. I figured he'd bounce me and I'd have to try and mend our relationship, but they all succeeded. I was Italy and I had three builds in 1901. I have seen this before.
So hi.
A sort of famous game at WAC a few years ago that I was on that board. They all succeeded. I was Italy. I had three builds in 1901. I ended up building. He actually has a question. This is a thinly veiled brag, but he actually worked a question into it. I think it's actually kind of an interesting question. I ended up building Fleet Venice, Army Rome, Fleet Naples. What would you guys have done in my position?
Not that.
Okay. Go on, Mr. Italy.
Well. My question is, really, there has to be more going on here to do the Fleet Venice, because you've essentially walked into Vienna and Trieste, and
I'm sure Austria doesn't build.
Austria doesn't build, but he's in Siberia and, it's not Siberia,
whoa,
Serbia and Budapest, right? And
yeah,
maybe you
so
can
you got like 2-on-2 kind of a thing going on there. The Fleet, I don't hate the Fleet, I guess, Fleet Venice. There, this is one of two Fleet Venice related emails.
Yeah,
there,
maybe. But I mean, why not press your advantage? Because all you can do is hold there. You can't really attack because
I guess the plan is you're built.
You ship it out to the Adriatic, so you have support for Trieste.
Yeah, and then you're set for a convoy.
Yeah, but in the same term, you're already in Venice.
Rome to Apulia, and then you can convoy over. Your attack slows down there no matter what, but.
Yeah, but what was
so you prefer? You prefer two armies?
Well, that because it's just faster. Like you just slip Trieste down and you follow in with Venice to Trieste.
Right.
I mean, there's like you're creating this whole convoy like magic when you just could just walk there.
Your Tunis piece is kind of out of the equation no matter what, because you're going to the Ionian and only Tunis or Naples gets to go there. Right. Yeah.
And I do agree with Fleet. Naples. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You have to do that. You make sure that Turkey is contained and you're not like, because Turkey builds another fleet. You always build another fleet. You have to have that one. But there's just no reason to have three at all. You're not jumping the gun. Even if you have three, it's going to take you a year or and a half to get in a position to fight your way into a position where you can actually attack the Turk. And when you could be just gobbling up more of Austria.
Yeah, it depends a little on the diplomatic situation, too.
Well,
it depends if, like, everybody is all... Like, I think he might have the best just, oh, crap, now everybody's going to freak out because I just built three and I just need to deal with everybody. He might have the best builds for that.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Because then you probably want to be in the Tyrrhenian is just sort of a little bit of a deterrent to France, because if France is panicking and feeling like he has to come attack you right away, then you kind of want to make yourself look ugly there. And you don't need the extra fleet for, you know, again, only Naples or Tunis can go to the Ionian. At that point, right?
Right. I mean, and I guess in a less nice way of saying it, I mean, if you're building Fleet Naples, people are like, oh, so you're not going to go gung-ho then. Okay, then maybe I don't have to...
Right.
I don't have to freak out.
Well, it just...
Clear, you don't even, know what the
even,
hell you're doing.
Even tactically, there's no... There's going to be a fleet that sits parked for a season. Right?
Sure.
I mean... Unless the fleet... No, you know, the more I think about it, the more I like it. Because...
It's terrible.
You're terrible. Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm. But because the only way that you get another fleet involved, given that you have that fleet just parked in Tunis, the only way that you get a second fleet involved is if you build it on your other shore.
Involved how?
In anything eastern.
So you're saying you're defining a move to the Adriatic as being involved easternly. Like, how are you involved? You're just positioning yourself, and then you're in the exact same situation as if you hadn't built the fleet at all.
Yeah.
If you prefer, I mean, you can move...
where are you moving your armies? If you build Army Rome, Army Venice, where are you moving your armies?
It will depend on how things are going.
Yeah.
You'll get a read on what's going on. So there's a couple of options.
You're probably not getting to... Albania. I think I was saying Apulia earlier when I went to Albania.
Yes.
You're probably not getting to Albania.
Maybe not. It'll depend.
Yeah.
That's one. You can be risky about it and go, yeah, I'm going to go through this Albania thing.
Yeah.
And that's... Or you can just do the slow and steady and just pop right up to Tyrolia and start mucking about with, you know, Trieste and Vienna, and you can try and pop Budapest. You're obviously going to be talking to the Turk or the Russian. You probably give them something. If you're giving them something, like perhaps the Turk, maybe you can slip into Albania. Like, so you're doing stuff.
Yeah, you got to talk to the Russian about like Galicia, Albania.
Right. Or if people are freaking out, maybe you need to go over to, maybe you need to go west towards France to Piedmont. So, I mean, maybe that's the thing you have that option, and you still have the option of doing the Piedmont, flipping up to Venice, and then being able to, like, have some movement with those two pieces, because you're essentially stranding them.
Yeah.
They're stuck there doing nothing but supporting themselves. And if a wall can hold there and nobody's going to freak out about it, maybe that's fine.
Yeah, you're probably not building the next year anyway.
Right, maybe that's fine. But you need to have a plan with that section.
You need to have an ally is what you need to have.
Well, and let me tell you what happened here. I'm sure, like, Turkey is not happy.
Yeah.
Turkey is going to freak out, and France is not going to be happy either. Both of those people.
When they see the extra fleet.
Because now France is like, you have that extra.
I guess on the diplomatic level, you plop two armies down and you're just saying, look, I have one target only, and it's Austria. Don't worry. Who wants to carve him up with
Right.
me? Yeah. Okay.
And, I mean, and for Italy's success, unless you're attacking France right out of the gate, you need France to say, not mad at you for as long as possible.
Yeah.
Because that will just destroy you.
Well, I like it better than Nathan does.
Well, you know, it depends on the situation. I do agree. There are situations where that could work. You could...
That famous board at WAC, just to tell the story real quick, our friend showed up for just that one round, did that to his Austrian neighbor, then immediately imploded because everybody on the board freaked out and wanted to like kill him back, but he died just in time to make sure that Austria died too, and then he didn't come back for the rest of the tournament. So basically he just appeared, did that,
and said, see ya!
Died and did not return to the tournament. Good times.
Well, as long as we're on the topic, and let's go to the other, we have another email about this Fleet Venice, right?
Oh, all right. I can skip. I can be flexible. I can roll with it.
Just draw some from a different place in the bag.
Oh, all right. Here we go. Okay, this is a little more conventional. It comes from... Is this the one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Comes from Simon. Hey guys, was just listening to your builds piece. Very well done. I have an addition to the Italian build section you might be interested in, the one instance where Fleet Venice might make sense. Well, we just heard another from a three-build Italy, but again, those don't usually happen, so his is... Okay, so it's Winter 01. You ended up with two builds and you're attacking Austria.
Okay.
You have Army Tyrolia, Army Trieste, Fleet Tunis. Not uncommon.
Nope.
Probably you dotted Austria when he wasn't expecting it.
Yeah.
You know, Austria just went for Greece and Serbia and got them, and has stalled Russia out of Galicia with Army Vienna for all of, for 1901. Yeah, okay.
Sure.
So, his point is, you know he's got to build Army Budapest, right?
Because it's the only open build.
Only open one, because he's still
in Vienna.
And your choices are to build either Army Venice and be stuck supporting Trieste's hold until someone else comes in and attacks, and Fleet Naples, with the eventual aim of getting to the Adriatic Sea, or you can do something else, right?
Yeah.
Remembering that you can afford to lose Trieste next spring, assuming you can bring enough force to retake it in the fall. For that, you're going to need a force of four to beat Austria's armies in Vienna, Budapest, Serbia. Sure. You could count on Turkey or Russia helping, but ideally you don't want to have to do so. They could be attacking each other or working with Austria as well. So how do you get four units on Trieste by the end of 02? Answer, Fleet Venice, Army Rome. Okay, so this is basically the same thing that we were just talking about. He's right that if you plan on just going ahead and losing Trieste in the spring,
yeah.
I mean, in this case, it's different from the last case because this time Austria actually built. Instead of losing two of his home dots, he just lost the one.
Right.
So now you're going to lose Trieste.
You might.
If you do, you have a retreat to Albania, which
is fine.
You're not
going to lose Trieste. I mean, if you build the army, you're not going to lose Trieste.
Yeah, it's 3-on-3, and then you have to wait a year.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
3-on-3, and then, you have to wait a year for the fleet to get, the fleet Naples to get over to the Adriatic, where you need it in order.
Right, but that's not, I mean, what you're going to do is you're going to take Vienna.
Right.
I mean, that's what's going to happen.
Sure.
You're going to take Vienna with Trieste, and then you're going to bounce them with, try and bounce with the army. Maybe they take it. He's going to be in disarray. But I agree, if you want to get four on Trieste,
this is the quickest way.
This is the quickest way to get four on Trieste.
Yeah. And then you follow up Rome right away up to Venice, planning on retreating to Albania. Well, he could pop your unit.
Yeah, he's going to pop the unit. I mean, if he knows what he's doing, he's popping the unit, which is... My critique of this is, like, you haven't really gained anything. You essentially have... You've committed yourself to an extra fleet with the eventual outcome of just sitting in Trieste again. With probably a unit... I mean, like, you haven't really gained anything that you would have had
with
an army.
You've gotten to the Adriatic a season sooner.
Well, of course you've gotten to the Adriatic a season sooner, but I go whole games without going to the Adriatic ever,
right.
So it's
sure.
Like,
if you have no diplomatic leverage with Russia and Turkey and or they're too distracted, this is probably the way to go. Because you need to do it all yourself, which means you need four around Trieste before you're ever going to really make any progress.
But you're not... I mean, you haven't really made any progress, right? I mean, all you're going to do is retake Trieste and be in the exact same position as if you had the army and just supported it. Right? And all you've gained is a fleet sitting in the water that presumably you're going to need.
Hold on. There's more.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, maybe the answer's in here.
Yeah, right. And maybe he knows more about this game than we do, seems likely. Remembering that Trieste has fallen and Austria's only fleet is in Greece, he can't stop Rome to Venice to the Adriatic, that's true, nor usually can anyone else. So there's two units immediately on Trieste. Your other moves are Tunis to the Ionian, sure, and Tyrolia supports Trieste to Vienna. Okay.
Yeah.
Which sometimes will work, is his point.
Right.
If all goes well, you're sitting in Vienna. Okay, so that was your point.
Right.
If all goes well, you're sitting in Vienna with four units ready to retake Trieste. You should probably be able to take Vienna and reclaim Trieste in 0-2, and then you're at 6. Austria's on the decline, and your position is really powerful. Okay, so this gives you the best... I didn't really think of it this way. It actually kind of gives you the best shot at Vienna. Although you could...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it gives you the best shot at not just sort of ping-ponging back and forth between right. Vienna and Trieste.
Right. And actually getting your 3 in a row, which is what you want.
Right.
To be able to get any further. Okay. I someday may consider building Fleet Venice. I mean, as if I ever build two as Italy. I'm lucky if I build anything at all. What did I say? Fleet Tunis? Fleet Venice.
You mean Fleet Venice, yeah.
I'm awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think... Yeah, I still probably wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's clear.
Yeah. Moving on, here's just another feel-good one that I just wanted to read because it has all of my favorite characteristics in it. It's somebody from somewhere new telling us that, like, he likes our show and that he's organizing his hobby in his city. So I'm going to read it. His name's Robert Primus. Primus. He says, my name's Robert Primus, and I'm a young diplomacy player from New York City that recently found your podcast randomly on iTunes. Okay, so it wasn't random. I deliberately ran a search for diplomacy podcasts. That probably makes me something of an official geek. Yeah.
Yeah,
welcome. It does, but nice. Nice.
Good thing.
I'm glad we come up now when you search that, and it's not just like podcasts about actual diplomacy. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, today in the State Department or whatever would come up.
You're in Chechnya.
Yeah. I'm a fairly new player, having only played DIP for a few years, and never having played competitively in a face-to-face tournament. I just wanted to tell you guys that I'm a big fan of your podcast and to keep up the good work. In fact, your interview with Jim O'Kelly inspired me to try to organize the players in my area in a similar manner to what he managed in Chicago. See, that we're getting more traction out of the Jim O'Kelly interview, I swear. Jim, we're sending you a check for like a percentage of our residuals from that episode. Yeah, so.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll give you... 50% of everything we've earned.
Totally. Is this going to go 75?
Oh, man, you're a generous man. I think it's good, though.
Yeah.
I think it's fair. It's the right thing to do.
All right. After just a few days of digging around and meeting a couple of experienced DIP players that have pointed me in the right direction, like Conrad Woodering, who I suspect you know.
We do.
Not sure who knows who, since I'm a new guy, but I get the impression that he's a well-known player, organizer, and fine connoisseur of... Realtors.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yes, we know Conrad. He didn't write the realtor part. Anyway, he says, I'm happy to mention that I've assembled over 30 contacts of players in New York City and the surrounding area that are willing to play in future face-to-face games, and already there will be a face-to-face game that will have a table consisting of only these players I've met in recent days, this Saturday, December 17th. All right, this email's a bit outdated.
But we should actually, Robert, he's coming to WAC. So we should talk to him about...
Robert is.
Yeah, Robert's coming to WAC.
Awesome. Yeah. New York, I lived there for a while. It was weird how in the biggest city in America, it was so hard to get a game together. You're already doing better, Robert, than I ever did when we were there. It was...
Wow, to be fair.
We had like one two-board event.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, I'm bad at organizing. It was really mostly Brian Shelton that was doing it. But I think New York is sort of a funny place because as big as it is, like, people kind of come and go from there a lot more. Yeah. It's, like, not somewhere where a long-term hobby can spring up because there's always people who live in New York for a year or two and they'll come and play while they're there. But you constantly have to go back to the well to actually find the people to do the games. But so, I mean, that's great.
Yeah, no, it sounds like...
Absolutely.
It sounds like you got, like, you know, with a week and a half of notice, you got a full board, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Kudos. I like it. And we'll see more emails like this.
Yep. There's more. You want to hear the rest?
Oh, yeah, no. I was huzzah! You know, I was getting excited.
I sent an email to Jim O'Kelly telling him the part that he has also indirectly played in this by inspiring a guy that probably should have spent this week studying for his final exam.
Yeah, I know how that is.
Yeah. To instead begin organizing a local board game hobby group. As a matter of fact, he responded to my email just an hour later. Yeah. Oh, holly Jim.
Yeah.
80%. You're up to 80% now.
Yeah, but that's Jim. All he does is respond to email.
And offered me a lot of information to help get me started in my endeavors, including an article he wrote for Diplomacy World that basically laid out how he got the Windy City Weasels going. Hey, you guys would would want to know some of the good you're doing by connecting and helping to develop the hobby throughout the country. Maybe I'll catch you guys at the WDC for my first tournament if I make it out to Chicago in 2012. All the best, Robert.
Actually, yeah, like I said, his first tournament, he got so excited that he's coming to WAC.
Yeah, you're going to catch us in about 2 weeks, buddy, and it's going to be awesome. Anyway, looking forward to it.
Sorry in advance for everything Eric's going to do on a board.
To NYC? No, man. I never do anything to NYC. Just ask Chris.
Just ask. Where's Brian Sheldon?
Yeah, right. Okay. Good email.
I feel good.
I feel great.
Podcast high five.
So we did. Nice. Very nice. Let's get us a toilet flush and a spraying noise, and we're all set.
We are this close to having a morning talk show that is your morning commute. Can you imagine? Come on.
Yeah.
Where, like, every morning you're driving to work, you got your cup of coffee, you stopped at your Starbucks or whatever, and you turn into Diplomacy Cast. And there it is. And it's just us going sports and weather and
Howard Stern's on commercials. Yes. So just checking in, see what the diplomacy guys are talking about. We'll be like, Munich to Bohemia. Yeah.
Oh, God. I can taste the greatness.
Oh, it'll be so
good. We have to make more fart jokes, I think, is really what that's all about.
We could probably make
prank calls.
Fart jokes. All right.
I was just in the moment there.
Yeah, we got another one from another new listener here. Hey guys, I'm Andrew, and I started listening to your podcast this month, and I think you guys do a great job at discussion. I haven't fully caught up with all of them, but even from what I've heard, you managed to hit on many good points, not just for experienced players, but for inexperienced players as well. I want to give my two cents as an experienced online player and a longtime Austria player. Yeah, buddy. Especially reflecting on your comments in the Austria podcast, as well as some online play, since you guys chiefly focus on face-to-face.
Oh, perfect.
Okay. excuse me. Firstly, for Austria, you mentioned briefly in your Austria podcast that the hedgehog opening tends to be slightly more likely online. I'd like to emphasize that for online play, it's extremely likely. This was interesting to me.
This is actually exactly the sort of information I want to know. I knew it was something that, obviously, we knew that.
Yeah.
But I did not know to the extent.
This is absolutely critical for online players of Austria as well as Italy and Russia. To be clear, I'm talking about Vienna, Galicia, Budapest, Serbia, Trieste, Venice.
Yep.
For some reason online, whoever moves the unit out of Venice, Trieste first often ends up being the one that loses the center, even though in an Austro-Italian conflict, the fight rarely gets further than swapping Trieste and Venice back and forth. Wow.
Well, we can move on. We've talked about that.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I guess I see his point. If everybody's opening hedgehog,
yeah,
you know, if that's the trend and everyone's used to the hedgehog, I can imagine that actually is.
Yeah,
you know, there is way too much fight over those two spaces, which must mean that Russia's and Turkey's do way too well in online. Yeah. But
I'm sure it ends up being France and does great, but you know.
I'd say the hedgehog is therefore used about 75% of the time, with the slightly non-aggressive variant of Trieste holds instead of Trieste to Venice counting toward that percentile. Sure. The Russian is pretty much guaranteed to go to Galicia, and like you guys and Buffalo mentioned, there are a few people I would trust to choose not to bounce in Galicia. I really need to know the person to be able to judge whether, And I think that's a big part of it. It is that online you're usually playing a total stranger, and bouncing Galicia with
it's just a cost benefit, right? I mean, you gotta... It's the risk reward, right? You got, how much are you willing to trust this person? And really, it's just not worth it.
I can say that face to face, probably every single time I'm playing either Russia or Austria at the beginning, even if I'm playing a total stranger as my neighbor, I'll go, you know, we don't have to go to Galicia. And I know you're the same way.
Yeah.
I'll say, we really don't have to go to Galicia, where there's so much more awesome stuff that we can do if we don't go to Galicia. And then really kind of, you know, look the guy up and down, try and kind of, you know, go low on him and check the eyes and check the reaction and sort of listen to his voice. And
body language, like, oh, yeah.
You
know, you can usually tell that people are like, oh, uncomfortable with that.
But, yeah.
Which is too bad, because what a waste.
Yeah. Or they'll say, let me get back to you on that. Let me think on that. Like, you know, you can sometimes get a read, but you can't online.
Yeah.
So online, I suppose.
No, it makes sense.
Especially against a stranger, you know. Unless, I guess the one kind of read that you can get online at least from my experience online, would be if you get a guy who's written a 5-paragraph essay about how great it would be to not bounce in Galatia. You know, like, if you get somebody who's, like, clearly putting some thought and energy into convincing you that this would be a stupid thing to do. My experience, most people in online games didn't bother to do that, especially in Spring 01, and then just go to Galatia. Because they know they're blowing it with you. If they really get this, make a really persuasive case, and you go, all right, you've talked me into it, you don't go to Galatia, and they do, they're pretty much...
and we're done.
Yeah. You're pretty much... Why are you ever going to believe anything that guy says for the rest of the game? Like, he better be shooting to kill, and you can't really shoot to kill in Spring 01.
Yeah.
And so, in my experience, if people really make the effort... Whoa, something crazy just happened. If people really make the effort, Friday the 13th, that's what's going on here, they might not be lying to you. So that's the one way that you can really get a read online. But most of the time, you're probably
going to. Yeah, I mean, and especially when you have a culture of that happening, and you know 75% of the time people are going to do that. I mean, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? If everyone's a hedgehog, then you got a hedgehog.
Yeah, now it's the other part of the hedgehog that's a little more interesting. Let's see what he writes about that here. Well, okay, he doesn't say too much about it, but the other part is the Italy part of it.
Yeah.
See, I feel like in the tournament world, Austria's and Italy's tend to play nice in 01, at least Spring 01.
Well, it depends on what you mean by play nice. I mean, they're non-aggressive. I don't know if they're playing nice. There's a lot of holding that happens.
The Trieste to Venice move, it completely forgoing any idea of getting Greece, or at least one of Greece or Serbia. I suppose you can still get Greece instead of Serbia. The Trieste to Venice move, where instead of going to Albania, that seems like a lot of...
It's
expense
weird.
To me to foil an Italian attack that usually isn't coming. In my experience, I think Italians usually say, well, look, I'll just move to, I'll just hold, or I'll just move to Tyrolia, and then if I decide to dot the Austrian in the fall, I'll dot the Austrian in the fall. And so Italians usually, say that they're not going to go straight into Trieste, and they're not going to go straight into Trieste, or they say that they're not going to move too north, and they're not. I mean, I get that the Trieste to Venice will scuttle the too north.
I guess
it'll advance the dude back to Rome. But...
I completely agree. Like, all you've really done is, make sure that guy builds Army Venice if you're scuttling the north. I mean, that's all you've really done. Like, oh, good.
I mean, I guess you can tell him you're going to do it.
Yeah. Which is what if you're going to do that, you should tell them.
And then he just orders Venice hold anyway, and then you're pretty much in the same position, except with no chance of getting Greece.
Well, unless you don't, and you go to Albania instead.
I think it's just sort of a pessimistic move, and it's weird that it's become a default like that. Like, I get the Galatia bounce part of it, and the Galatia bounce is more common in face-to-face play anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that I understand, like...
I don't know.
I would save that for a panic situation. I would save that for something where I'm just sure... that the Italian really is after me.
I don't know.
But how are you going to be sure of that? You know?
I would rather... I mean, if you're that sure of it, just support Vienna into Tyrolia. I mean...
Huh?
If you're that sure of it, support Vienna into Tyrolia. It's a better use of time with...
You can't support Vienna into Tyrolia with a fleet.
Oh, God, it's a fleet. Wow. That was a diplomacy board in a while.
Yeah.
No, you're right. That's a fleet. So, but I take your point, and I agree with you. I don't understand why you would just ram that boat.
Just move Vienna to Tyrolia.
Yeah.
Solves that problem. I've done that.
Oh, yeah, no.
If
that's, I mean, that part remains unchanged.
If there's two moving north, then just move Vienna to Tyrolia.
That's embarrassing. Remembering that it's a fleet.
Yeah. But your point, I know what you meant. Sorry, buddy. Trying to prop you up here.
I appreciate it. Hey,
yeah.
I should get more sleep.
Yeah, you probably should.
I'm really limbered up for whack.
Wow.
I don't know how the pieces work, but I'm sure I'm going to do well.
Yeah, you're probably not going to play.
I'll play a little.
Yeah.
Play a little.
Well, if that's what you call what you'll be doing there, I suppose. Yeah.
Really?
Moving on. He has one more point on it. He says, I really wish I saw more Venice to Piedmont instead of Venice to Trieste. So I guess we do see a lot of Venice to Trieste right away from the Italian online.
It would be, I mean, he's interested. He does say he doesn't understand why people don't do it, which is, I think, relevant. Like, there's a lot of reasons people don't do that. It's, I think, because it's often unproductive.
Right.
I mean, there's just, it's harder to see. You're so pinched there. It's harder to see how you're going to get your gains, and you got to commit everything to it and essentially ignore the East.
I guess my question to the online people out there is that who play a lot of online games is when you draw that Austria, what's the press from Italy usually like in Spring 1901 as strangers? Is it really? I mean,
do you bother talking?
Yeah. Do people just go, hello, I'm going to attack you? Do people go, hello, I'm not going to attack you? And then they usually do some kind of attack anyway? Do they, you know, is it just like everybody assumes that they're coming out? I think it's a cultural difference, and it's one that I'm curious about, that, you know, I feel like it's a kind of a chicken or the egg thing. Like, hedgehogs breed hostile Italians, breed hedgehogs, breed hostile Italians, you know? And I don't know. It's just surprising to me that it's that prevalent. And I'd be curious to learn a little more about that from the folks out there. Thanks for the email.
I do agree with him, though, that if you're just comparing that hedgehog, like, Venice to Trieste is not as good as Venice to Piedmont. I mean, if you're just going to hedgehog it and not have anything to do, it does make more sense. There's more utility to go.
Oh, you mean just opening straight into Trieste?
Yeah, if you're just opening straight into Trieste, you're better. I mean, like, it's not a great way of going, but it's like, at least it's more productive. Anyway. Thanks for the email.
Department of Corrections from Superfan Josh. Let's see. He heard our last episode with Mark Ward.
Oh, yeah.
And he said that he wanted to clear up a couple of things. It got a little muddled when we were talking about online rating systems, and he thought he'd write in and clear some of that up. Let's see. Webdiplomacy.net has two ranking systems. Nathan, you read this one. My throat is tired.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, read it.
You might not want to go into radio.
Read it.
All right, so webdiplomacy.net has two ranking systems.
Go into the other room.
The primary...
Just going over here. Now I'm coming back again.
The primary official site system is a points-based system, where each player starts with 100 points that they use to buy into games. When the game is created, it is created with a buy-in value, and the pot is split depending on the outcome. This is actually similar to what we tried to do with the ante system.
Right.
Ante, as in ante up. It's a winner-take-all and points per supply center. Naturally generate different outcomes depending on whether or not there's a solo, but even pot splitting among draw game participants. All right. The official less recognized ranking system ranks players based on the number of points each player possesses. Great.
Okay, so that's the one that we did talk a little bit about, where the higher your ranking, the more you ante.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then it gets split up depending on your results. Yeah.
It's a sound, like I said, it's a sound concept. We've tried to do it face to face. I think for us it's a little cumbersome to try and do the math, but I think it would work well online. I mean, I like that idea of. I
love that idea.
It's a really great idea.
Anybody out there who wants to do that for face to face, I'll give you the other 20% of what we earn that I'm not already giving to Jim O'Kelly. Please.
It would be great to have we tried to make something. I know we tried to make a program that would do it, and we just haven't been able to. Anyway, there's a second system, Josh goes on to say, created by William Anthony, who posted his ghost rating system in Diplomacy World somewhere, maybe issue 108. The site doesn't officially recognize the system, but the playing community uses it far more frequently as a measure of player strength. The system, as Mark explained, is a larger use of the ELO system from chess, merely extended to 7 players from tricking your draws and survivals. The ghost rating system is updated monthly. Yes, this is what we were talking about.
Right,
and this is very similar to what Buzz Eddy was doing.
Yeah.
He used a similar ranking that was for many years quite popular before he retired. Josh goes on to say, players have various means by which they control who can and cannot get into games and create a more equal game board among peers.
Right.
Which is, you know, which is good, which is what we did the same thing face-to-face. We used to do that. Players can either require players to have certain ghost rating or higher. They can increase the pot size.
Yep.
And or password protect games and collect willing participants from the gaming community. Multiplaying still occurs and is still an immediately bannable offense, but it only occurs in low point novice player games. It's not terribly common, but it does occur, and moderators move quickly to eradicate such players. So that's just players who play more than one power because
God, I forgot all about that.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Anytime there's something with a score involved, you're just going to get just creeps that sit in basements and try and increase their scores. I don't know.
I just don't understand why it would be any fun. Like, I've beat these guys that I've never actually met.
So that my score gets higher, yes, so that you think that I'm good. Yeah.
I don't understand that. So I'm glad to hear that people are, squelching that out, because really, guys, don't do that. It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
may I continue reading this?
Sure. Yeah.
Because he's going to go on to talk about this particular thing.
Yeah.
Josh continues. I've found that most accusations are merely red herrings, and I often encourage players who suspect they have a multiplayer in their game to notify the moderators, and if the moderators aren't moving as fast as they need them to look at the issue, you can always talk secretly among the players and with their suspicions and see if it pans out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and he says you can always form a 5-on-2, which is a perfectly legit diplomacy tactic to form an alliance against the suspects. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, well, let's stop playing diplomacy and play punish those guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Now, to a side note, the Weasel Moot episode.
Okay. Yeah.
I didn't care too much about the last portion where you recorded the live bit from the tournament itself. See, good feedback.
Yeah.
I liked the idea, but not the follow-through. You know, we weren't that pleased with it either, frankly. But we tried it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, mostly garbled noise, yeah. It would have been better to follow a lone player or two and listen to in on their conversation, end of game chatter, and the player's reaction.
I agree. And I know somebody tried to do this a while ago with video instead of audio.
Oh, yeah. I'm in that video.
It would be great. What we need is a volunteer, basically.
We need more than a volunteer. We need people that are willing to be recorded, because there's going to be a lot of people mid-diplomacy game where they will not allow it.
Yeah, and we need somebody to do the actual following around with a mic, which we're generally not available to do because we're either playing or organizing tournaments. You know, it's something I'd love to do. It's sort of an ambition of mine, but it's logistically, I think, kind of beyond us at this point. I agree. That's what we should do. The thing that we did, the just recording the room, it was kind of a last ditch. Yeah, let's give this try and experiment.
I was hoping for more.
We didn't get much positive feedback about it, and we're probably not going to do that again. We are still talking about
what we're going to do for WAC.
What we're going to do for WAC, which, boy, I mean, since it's our tournament, I mean, our city's tournament, I should say, we're going to be busier than usual. And so, the books are open. If you have any sort of low stress suggestions of something that we might do at WAC, we'd love to hear it. But yeah.
And then finally, Josh rounds out with another. Let's bring up the fact that Nathan called St. Petersburg an Eastern Center instead of a Western Center.
Oh God, what an idiot!
Yeah, that guy. Well, since I don't even know what that Austria starts out with a fleet in Trieste, maybe I am just an idiot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, I agree it's a Western Center. I was just
That's not his point. Read the thing. P.S. I think there's a better way to view St. Pete is to view it as a Western Center. Not only in terms of the 17-17 split, it's a Western one, but Russia isn't solely an Eastern power. As soon as he decides to move Moscow to St. Petersburg in spring 01, he's as much a Western power as an Eastern power, because he's staking claim in Western territory. See, he's kind of trying to give you a little...
How?
Oh, God, you're so fragile.
I don't care.
He's right in that Russia is... It does have that unique position where it straddles the lines, and it is unique. Who has starting home centers in both theaters? Nobody. Just Russia.
That's what I'm saying. Only if you...
buddy. Yeah.
Most powers are right on a stalemate line.
Yeah.
And you're just... If you're saying if you want to call it a Western center, fine.
You can't build in either theater. Only Russia can build in both theaters.
Only if you artificially say this is a Western center because it makes sense because of the stalemate line. Right? That's the only reason it's a Western center.
Not right. The thing about the stalemate line is that even... What are the other ones that border the stalemate line?
Germany, Austria, France, Italy.
Okay, so like Munich and Vienna and Venice and Marseille and what else?
Yeah, I don't know what you're trying
Warsaw.
To
All of those centers have a one empty space buffer across the stalemate line, don't they? In other words, if you want to build in one of those things, you're a year away from a game.
From a game?
From a game. If you build in Venice, you're a year away from Munich.
Okay.
If you build in Berlin, you're a year away from Warsaw. If you build in Marseille, you're a year away from Venice. Right?
Okay.
St. Petersburg, if you build in St. Petersburg, you're a move away from Norway.
Okay.
That's unique.
In what way?
There isn't another space on the board where... That's what makes it part of the West.
If you say so. That's fine. Oh. I understand that it's a Western center. I get that that's the way you're talking about it. But it's incredibly artificial. It's all about this stalemate line that if you're just talking to someone who doesn't understand the game, you're going to confuse them. That's my only point.
But our listeners understand the game.
Yes, indeed. I know. It's great. I'm not disagreeing with you that it's a Western thing. I think your rationale is retarded, but...
It's not retarded! You're so wrong! You build... At any point in the game, when you're Russia, if you still own St. Petersburg, you can pop a unit down there, and you're already involved in the West.
Okay.
Right?
Sure.
Where else is that true? Just forget the West. Just say Eastern powers.
Marseille.
You pop a unit down there, you're still two away from a dot.
But your rationale is that the dot makes the stalemate line, which is not at all true.
No, it doesn't. You're right. It doesn't.
I mean, this is why I'm saying it's retarded. You're just making up crap.
The reason it's a stalemate position is because you can actually stalemate it from the West.
Yeah, that's why it's called a stalemate position.
That's the more technical reason that it's a Western center. But I'm saying that looking at it from another way, like what Josh was saying, looking at it from another way, it's also got you more involved in the West right away, and then Russia's other three centers have you involved in the East right away.
Okay.
That's unique. No other power on the board has that position.
If Munich drops to Bohemia, as we talked about in this beginning of this episode, you're immediately involved in the East.
Yes.
If you drop down, if you take Marseille and you, instead of, if you move to Piedmont, you're immediately involved in the East.
Yes, but the reason that that big thing is called stalemate line is that it's all stalemateable on both sides.
I agree with that. I'm just saying your rationale doesn't make any sense.
Looking at it from a technical perspective, this is great. I'm going to win an argument with a lawyer. I love this. Looking at it from a technical perspective, on one hand, we can say that you can stalemate along that line. On 1717. That's one reason. But just from a more pragmatic standpoint, I'd also point out that never mind the stalemate, it's just hard to get stuff across that big barren line. Right?
Okay.
It's just difficult to mount a sustained offensive that actually works out. Where if you're Austria, it's just hard to conquer Germany.
Okay.
Right?
Sure.
And the reason that it's hard to conquer Germany is because there's that barren zone that you always have to be moving through. Everything's minimum of a year away. Most of it is more than a year
away. That's not why it's hard.
Yes, it is. It's because...
I mean, if you're going for the fact
there's
that
no
it's
dots along the way.
So?
If Russia wants to mount a northern offensive into the West...
Okay.
It's not as hard to do because there's dots along the way to feed you. There's Norway, there's Sweden, there's Denmark. Like you can just sort of get those as you go and keep pumping out units on that side and not have to cross that bridge every time. When you build your new unit in St. Petersburg, you don't have to walk as far. If I'm Austria, I'm attacking Germany. Every time I build a new unit in Vienna, I still have to walk a year to even get to my front. Russia's right there.
That's totally cool. We could absolutely be done with this. It's fine. I think you're mixing your rationalizations. You're saying it's easier because there's dots there, but then you're saying it's not as far, which has nothing to do with the dots.
Those are two parts of the same argument.
Yeah, but that's internally inconsistent, and it's fine. It's a Western dot. I get that.
You might think we planned this, listeners. We didn't. But now I want to hear from you. Who's right?
Oh, there's no... I'm not even arguing with you. You think you're winning an argument where I began agreeing with you. Yeah. You're a retard.
I won.
You won nothing.
I won. I'm the champion, the number one champion of America.
Oh, good Lord.
Oh, I'm the best diplomacy player ever.
Yes, it's very much reflected.
We should have Dave Maletsky on to settle this.
Actually, he would agree with me.
But, yeah, I'm sure he would, just on principle. We should somehow disguise our voices and then have Dave Maletsky on.
anyway, because I don't want to talk about this anymore,
yeah,
listeners, mm-hmm. There's no confusion. Definitely a Western center. Absolutely. Not arguing for anything other than that.
You know what that means, too.
I'm merely saying that Eric's justifications for it, his argument for it, isn't internally consistent. I think you could just say it's on the stalemate line and stalemate from the West.
I'm going to say one last thing on this and then we can move on. Your mom's son.
Not after I came out. Anyway.
Moving on.
I feel good.
Yeah.
I feel good.
Yeah. Bracing.
I hope you guys enjoyed that.
Brisk.
I did say the word retarded too often.
Yeah.
If you're going to win an argument, definitely call someone that. Because that's powerful.
Objection overruled. Your Honor, that's retarded.
I like having sophisticated argument skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Years of law school.
We got one more, and I'm glad Mark did it because we kind of wanted to bring up some of this stuff, and Mark kind of went ahead and did it for us. Our guest from our last episode, Mark Ward, we got to talking a little bit with him. Probably most of you listened. I don't know if everybody did, but if you didn't, we got to talking a little bit with him about sort of the dynamics of face-to-face kind of people knowing each other at face-to-face events versus the online environment where they're usually at least sort of strangers. And it brought up some interesting stuff that we've kind of been talking back and forth about a lot, and it's one of my favorite subjects, and so we're going to read some chunks of Mark's email here and just kind of get into it all over again because it's fun to talk about and we got time to fill. So
I don't know about that, but yes, I think it's good. It's good. Let's do it.
Mark writes, "Hey guys, that was an interesting podcast. Though now, of course, I have much more to say. Yeah, which is awesome.
What happens?
Yeah. There's so much good. Just bear with me on this.
Stuff. I am officially buckled in.
I like to talk about. I don't know about you, but
I'm locked and loaded. Let's do it.
As far as the concept of, quote, buddying up, unquote, it doesn't have to even be buddies. For example, in my second game last year at WAC, I was Russia, and two guys playing Italy and Turkey didn't really know anyone else at the tournament either, but the two of them allied in the first round together, took part in a draw, and thus knew each other a bit. Okay. When it came to the round two game with me, all things being equal, odds were relatively heavily weighted that they were going to choose to ally with each other than choose to ally with me. Yeah.
That's true.
That's all I can say about that is, man, that's happened to me before.
All I can say about it is that's why I like the game.
Yeah. I mean, those of us that play this game face-to-face, I don't know if this happens online, too, but that's the kind of stuff that we'll start talking about right away in Spring 01.
Yeah.
If some third person on the board knows that,
part of 1901 is just exchange. What do you know about this guy? I mean, like...
Yeah, let's say I was on board number one, and then I'm also on board number two with these same two dudes, and I know that they were in the same this alliance before. I'm going to... The first thing I'm going to do is start walking around to the other people on the board and telling them, hey, so these guys worked together last game. They seem to be kind of buddies. Because even if I don't mean it, even if I'm not really suspicious about them being buddies, anyone that's so paranoid... Especially if I'm one of their neighbors, like, that might actually raise somebody's eyebrow and make them go, oh, Well, really? That, yeah, we should probably deal with this. So I mean, you want to sow paranoia. It's one of those. I don't know. I mean, it sucks. Sometimes that doesn't work. I've totally been in that situation where you're like, really, guys, two games in a row, and then you just die.
Yeah. But if it worked every time, it wouldn't be. I mean, this is my thing about this whole thing.
Yeah.
If it works every time, it wouldn't be fun. The diplomacy is only fun because it's not formulaic, and every time you're just trying to figure out the puzzle and do everything you can to sort of bring about the result. And I mean, if it just worked, it would be. I would not enjoy it.
I can remember. I think it was the big Worlds in Vancouver. I was in a situation where I worked with a guy pretty much for a whole game. In one round, and then he and I were neighbors again the very next round, and I kind of went, oh, okay, awesome, we can work together again.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, okay, great, yeah, we know we work well together. Yeah, about spring 02, fall 02, he nailed me. Just because he was like, I didn't really want to play a whole other game like that.
It just seemed boring.
Fair enough, that's usually something I'd do.
You beat me to it, cowboy.
So for every time that happens, there's a lot of times that the opposite of that happens, just because diplomacy is kind of volatile. And also, there's a ton of stuff that you can do if you suspect that that's going on. Like, you should be out there sowing... Hell, you should be out there sowing paranoia about things that aren't even true.
That guy has crabs. I mean, make stuff up. Are you all right there?
Carry the show, man. I'm just drinking something. Just carry the show.
Good. You have an alcohol problem. You know that?
It's iced tea, buddy.
Oh.
It's iced tea.
All right.
Okay, in the same game, too, Nathan was Germany, and the guy who was playing England clearly knew Nathan. Okay.
That happens.
Yeah. People clearly know Nathan. There was at least 3 seasons in a row where England was trying to attack me in Scandinavia, where Nathan's Germany was, for the most part, neutral and letting England and me battle it out, where after each time I successfully defended against England's attack, England would be frustrated and say something like, can you believe that? Okay. Should I read the rest of this, or can I stop right here?
I don't remember this game at all.
I'm going to stop right here, because this is... Nathan does this to everybody in every freaking diplomacy game that he's ever played in his entire life. It's the only thing he's good at in this game. It's just like, somehow just being like, don't bother with me, I'm just hanging out, having fun, not hurting anybody. Just go get that guy, and he can give you this pep talk where you're like, yeah, Nathan's right, I should be kicking that guy's ass. Nothing special here.
Yeah, no, this is pretty much part of the course. So was I just sitting around getting bigger and not helping? Yep, that sounds like me.
Yeah. And he goes on, and England didn't say it to himself. He didn't say it to Italy. He said it to the guy he knew in real life, his friend, because that's who you tell things to when things don't go quite right. Yeah. It's everybody. This is why Nathan's good at diplomacy. Anyway, the body language and the sense I got from the situation was that England was pretty much dead set on attacking me in the north no matter what. No, not dead set. It's just that he would get up and pass off. Nathan after every season about how well it was going.
Well, yeah.
And when Nathan joined in, there was very little I could do. That's true. You've been Nathan.
I don't remember that game at all.
And I guess there's an argument, the counter argument, if I'm arguing with myself here, I'd say we have the advantage of knowing that's kind of what Nathan does.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily know how to react to it. Once somebody...
There's really nothing you can do about it.
Somebody and whether he was buddy or not, I mean, I've seen Nathan do this with strangers, too. It's just kind of like one of those things that you should be trying to do also. It's just like aiming people at other people.
Yeah, why do it yourself when someone else...
Friends or strangers, I'm not saying there's no advantage. If Nathan knew this guy, we don't know who the guy was. But
we could look it up.
But. Yeah, but if Nathan knew the guy in advance, sure, it's probably easier for him to get to that guy and kind of get him on board and be like, come on, we did this before. We had a great alliance. Yeah. It was fun. You just keep attacking, keep going north, going north. This is good times.
That's a double-edged sword, by the way.
But it's double-edged sword because half of those people you stabbed at some point, and you were like, yeah, I remember how this went last time you stabbed me. So for every, early inclination to listen to somebody, there's also an early inclination at a grudge. There's also those times that you did the guy dirty. And if you're a stranger, then you're not going to have that history either. So your goal, especially as somebody who's new to the tournament circuit, is just to convince, you know, just to be like open, nice, honest, charming, etc., quick on your feet, and have plans that make sense.
Yeah.
You know,
have a plan.
Yeah,
just have a plan. Even if it's not the best plan, have a plan and push for it.
It tests your outgoingness.
Yeah,
this game it does. It and especially if you're used to playing online. And I know we touch on it again and again. We see the people who are used to playing online, the clock is real stressful. They come and they've I got 1 minute to talk to Russia, and I got 1 minute to talk to Germany. I got 1 minute, you know, and they're running around, and people, you know, when people come to me in that mode, so it I feel their stress and I get stressed out. You know, am I saying that right?
It's called, I think it's empathy.
Yeah.
It must feel weird.
Yeah. Because, right. Shut up. Whatever.
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail you.
I'll have a total empathy fight with you. I'll out empathy you. I mean, when people come and they seem nervous, they seem on edge, they seem like they're like stressed about the time. Probably, if you're not really thinking about it, your natural assumption is to think, oh, this guy's up to something.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm not saying you were doing that, Mark. I don't know if you were or not.
No.
I'm just saying that, you know, if you come at it easygoing and you've got a plan, people will listen to you, friend of Nathan or no friend of Nathan.
Right.
I mean,
I think in this situation, he was kind of boned. I mean, it wasn't really anything. I don't think this was his fault.
Well, I'm trying to make it more general.
I was just for clarification. But yes, you're totally right.
Yes, you were kind of boned, and if you were kind of boned, it's because you were a victim of that one thing that Nathan's good at. Which is,
I love, like, that I'm only good at one thing. Thanks.
God, you're still mad about the St. Petersburg thing, aren't you?
I'm really mad about that. Apparently, for the rest of the, like, every episode of this podcast.
Yeah, apparently. So.
Every like, people are going to start requesting it. Hey, do another 17-17 fight. Right. Exactly.
All right. What else are you good at?
What else am I?
No, you're good at it. You're good at getting jumped on at the beginning of a game and just like somehow like just living and then all
or
of
dying.
A sudden. Yeah, well, yeah. But all of a sudden, me just doing something on the other side of the board, and I'm like, and I'll be like, who let Nathan back in the game? Why is Nathan at 6? What the hell? I thought you guys were killing him.
You're good at that. One.
Yeah.
God damn. Okay, so moving back.
There's like 5 other awesome points in this. I don't know. There's some other awesome points. Another buddy factor in that specific game was that France had never played diplomacy before.
Wow. Okay,
yeah.
This sounds like a great positioning for me.
And me being in my first live game and France not being an immediate neighbor, I didn't chat with France too much early on. So, of course, France took Munich in 1901.
Oh, I was doing well.
Someone... Perhaps Austria, since I decided to declare war on Austria with my spring 1901 opening, largely because in game 1 I was Austrian and was immediately killed. Well, all right. Though, in all honesty, I guess it was Nathan that talked France into it just for something fun to do. Wait, weren't you Germany in this game?
Apparently.
All right.
Anyway. But I might have. That's entirely possible.
I see what he's saying. He's saying, and then after France took Munich, he retreated to the east.
Yeah.
That might have been something you talked him into doing. Yeah, story checks out. And in 1902, France supported Austria into my Warsaw. Sure, I tried to talk France out of it, but Austria and Germany had talked to France first. Yeah. Yeah. That's
dirty.
Yeah.
That is filthy. If I did that, that is filthy.
He says, now, I'm confident that this one could easily come off as poor play on my part, but in the online world, we can set up anonymous games and we can get people into games that have a decent skill level. So for me to drive 6 hours away and spend a few $100 on lodging, food, gas, only to end up having a noob is somewhat frustrating. Even knowing that part of face-to-face is growing the hobby, though perhaps some of that frustration with that specific game was more about the Italy-Turkey alliance that so easily formed when it wasn't exactly the most natural cooperation in the online. And the real-life buddy factor of England in regards to Germany. Okay, so now we got the whole board here.
Yeah.
So we've got Nathan Barnes, Germany. We've got Mark Ward, Russia.
Yeah.
We've got somebody who feels obliged to listen to Nathan, England.
We can totally look this up.
Brand new player, France. No, I like the pseudonyms. Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
We've got Italy, Turkey, who were allies in the previous game. Austria, Mark Ward's target.
Right.
From the outset. England, coming at Mark early.
Right.
Nathan hanging out, taking neutrals and loving it.
Yep.
France, although not exactly, because he does lose Munich in 0-1.
Probably.
But probably doesn't care.
I'm going to guess what happened there. I probably picked up Belgium and Holland and Denmark.
And just told France, yeah, what the heck, if you want to take a ticket. Yeah.
I'm going to bet that's what happened.
Yeah. the playing against noobs part of it.
Yeah. Well, first of all, that almost never happens at a tournament. I mean, there's very few, like, absolute noobs. Like, I've never played a game of diplomacy before. That almost never happens at a diplomacy event.
We talk about it a lot, though. We talk about, sure, at tournaments, how the weakest position on the board often sort of defines how the whole game is going to go. In sort of unpredictable ways. Like, when you really sit down and think, wow, what just happened in that game? A lot of times you'll just be like, oh my god, it was that France guy's first game, or he was just playing crazy, or he was,
yeah,
you know, that, like, that sort of tells the story of how the game is going to go. And that, yeah, I mean, I get that you don't want to have your game boned by that, but, like, I feel like part of being good at the face-to-face game is adapting to that, like, recognizing that and going, oh, okay, this guy doesn't know what he's doing, which means this is going to happen, which means this is going to happen, which means this is going to happen, and being right about that, don't you think?
Yeah, no, that's part of it.
I mean,
I think this is a really bad board for Mark.
Yeah,
this is a bad draw.
All that said, this is a terrible board for Mark, who even if he'd done everything right and adjusted to the situation, it might not necessarily have gone much better.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, let me think about that, because if you've got that, if you read the situation right away and get to that France guy and
say, don't listen to Nathan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Find a way of saying, don't listen to Nathan.
Yeah. Perhaps. Hey, look, he's going to build three.
Yeah. Well, and he did take Munich, and then you still have to be saying, don't listen to Nathan.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess you got to be going to him and saying, what can I do?
Yeah.
You know, what would help? Would it help if I bounced him out of Sweden? Yeah. Would it help if I, you know...
Yeah, what should I do?
Yeah. Would you rather see me work with this guy or that guy or the other guy? And obviously he's not going to know the answer to that, but at least you're saying that stuff to him.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And,
I mean, like,
he feels engaged. So there's a little something that could have happened there. I mean, and I know you're like, now maybe it was poor play on my part. It's not really poor play on your part, given that you don't play very much face to face.
Yeah. Oh, and you're talking about Mark. No, it's
Mark.
Yeah, I'm sure it wasn't poor play on his part. I mean, I'm sure he did fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's not poor play in a vacuum. It's poor play in a tournament, just because, like, one of the things that, like, needs to be your first priority at a tournament is sort of assessing the other players.
Yeah.
And you can't always do anything about it. It probably, when you're feeling rushed for time because you're not used to the clocks, the last guy that you're really worried about on the board when you're Russia is France, right?
Yeah.
You're probably just saying, oh, okay, you know, well, there's this France guy over there. He's kind of new to the board. I don't really have anything to talk to him about. He's probably overwhelmed too. He's probably not going to want to talk to me. But check back in with that guy and take a second to think about, oh, wow, okay, this France guy is really new to the game. What should I do? How should I adjust? All right. Anyway.
Moving on with this email. Wow, this is a long email.
Yeah, it is. That's why I saved it for last and funnest. For the record, I was never meaning to imply that everybody buddies up all the time, and I didn't think you meant that either. No. But I was just trying to say it's a real factor. My personal favorite is an online game that is anonymous, and everything about the game is based 100% on press within that game and orders submitted within that game. I understand that's not the original intent of diplomacy, since it was originally created for face-to-face, but the anonymous game is a very pure sort of thing where I can play by feel and wipe away all the distractions. So if you imagine me being that sort of person player, you can see how the above situations are a bit frustrating for me personally. he says, combined with the fact that I'm a total control freak, and something like Italy and Turkey being predisposed to cooperate against me is something that absolutely does not interest me whatsoever. Okay. Right. Do you want to go on that? I absolutely agree, for starters. The anonymous online game is purest, most distraction-free, most...
boring?
Well, okay. Most... If you solo a game with six strangers, all of whom are anonymous, and you play it online, I think you've achieved a singularly in-game best tactical victory, diplomacy victory. I think it's also not all there is to the game.
Well, I think I don't know. I mean, my take on it is. I'm trying to frame it.
You're going to be harsher on this than I am, I think.
In a positive way. I'm not interested in that game.
Yeah.
Because there's a dichotomy that's being put up here. Mm-hmm. So what Mark is saying, and I know this is Mark's position, he knows he's good at something and doesn't like when he goes to do that thing he's good at and it gets... mucked up.
It gets scuttled by a few things, like what happened in the previous game of the tournament. Some guy who doesn't know, who's never played before, a couple guys that are friends and predisposed maybe to work together. Yeah.
So if being good at that is not, I mean, for me, I'm not really, that's not why I like diplomacy.
Right.
I like diplomacy because of the mess. So, I mean, I'm not trying to mean this. That's just what he likes to do, and that's great. You know what? If you want to play that's fantastic. And I think it's obviously, and we both agree on this. We're trying to pull more people in face to face because we find this portion of the mess, trying to figure out the human garbage that you have to sift through to do well at this game. For me, being good at that's being good at life. That's being good at people stuff and. I think that's a cool thing to be good at. Like, if you're good at the diplomacy tactics, great. I'm not taking a crap on it. I think it's fine. It's just
not just tactics. Give him his due. It's not just the tactics. We're talking about a press game. We're talking about the fact that if you go out and solo that game, you've gone spot by spot by spot and persuaded people to let you win this game.
I'm sorry. I should not say tactics. You're right. That's the result.
It's not just tactical superiority. It's a whole. But the point is that at the beginning of the game, there's this clean slate.
Right.
And that is a different style than what we end up having in the world of face-to-face. And those of us that really love the face-to-face game love it for that reason. Yeah. We love it because it's not the six strangers anonymously of similar skill levels online. Yeah. That could be fun, too. And I mean, sometimes... Yeah, Nathan's shrugging. I think you really said well the point of that we like something a little different in the game. Like, we like the clown in France.
Yeah.
That's going to screw it up totally.
I mean, I might get very frustrated in-game, but, I like that mess. That's where the fun is.
Because it's even more of a challenge.
Yeah.
You have to do all the stuff you're going to do in the six people of similar skill level that are total strangers anonymous online game. You have to do all of that, and you have to do this other thing, which is just, manage crazy, interpersonal situations. And sometimes that your part, Mark, about how those interpersonal situations are... I mean, sometimes the scales are tipped. Sometimes it is buddies. Yeah. And you have to manage the fact that
it sucks.
These guys always work together. Great. And just throw that in the big, dumpster fire that we keep talking about here that is your average tournament diplomacy game. Okay, there's that. But then on the other hand, for honestly, and I say this and I don't know if people believe me or not, but honestly, for every time there's, oh God, those guys always work together, there's two or three wow, those guys never work together.
Yeah.
Like, and then that becomes an element of it. That's just like a random landmine that gets thrown in your game. Like, oh, wow, it's that guy and that guy. Those guys hate each other. That's great. Or at least, you know, they probably don't hate each other, but at least, like, they just work
they
really
do
badly.
Get along. Yeah.
There's, I honestly don't know that at this point in my playing this game, I don't know if there's one person I could name that I always work with.
There's definitely people I always try to work with.
But yeah, sure. But I think I could probably name 6 or 7 people that will never work with me again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of them even here.
Yeah. On this podcast.
It's a prop guy. It's not me.
Yeah.
No, but I want to be totally upfront with Mark, because I think he's... What the good thing here is he's really identified what he likes.
Yeah.
And he knows it. And I think that can be a strength. I mean, he's coming to WAC, so it'll be good to see
him.
I'm really glad that he's giving it another chance. But I'm hopeful that, you know, it just takes a little bit of a paradigm shift, if you will. Like, if you can think of it as, like, I'm not playing diplomacy, I'm playing face-to-face.
Yeah.
And maybe he can just be like, okay, I'm gonna try to manage all of this stuff and deal with this stuff. I really hope he has a good time, and I would be really disappointed if he had another experience like he did the last time.
He's going to have a blast.
Even if you don't like diplomacy, it's still a blast. I mean, these are great people.
Anyway. And free food.
Yeah, we don't need to get all the hoi polloi. Come on.
Yeah, right.
No, it's not. But it's good. It's not my thing. That's definitely his thing. And I think that's great. We can all live together in harmony.
Yeah. There's more to this. I want to read like a couple more of his notes. It's sort of in line with what we're saying here. Let's see.
Well, he has a contrasting story.
Yeah, he goes on to say, even Eric's comments on the podcast about not taking a solo because you have to play that same person for 20 years, that's a buddy system, right? Sure. Now, I'm not trying to say that face-to-face is all bad and evil. It just involves much more baggage that I'm not used to dealing with. That's exactly what we were just saying. It's a totally different game than online games, and that's fine, but what it is for good, bad, or indifferent, and what it is a game where success can be highly dependent on knowing others. Even if Nathan is a super friendly extrovert that didn't have an issue with that, for an introvert like me, who's pretty quiet, it turns into a major challenge. Yeah, I would say this about that. I have seen a lot of people in this hobby who come into it introverts, love it, and leave it extroverts.
Yeah.
You know, at least on the diplomacy board. It's I'm not gonna get so sort of starry eyed as to say that like it's great if you wanna like learn to be less shy or more social, but I really have seen a few
people. I know people like that.
Yeah, definitely. I name a few names, but they're shy. I don't want to.
I don't want to make them feel bad.
But the people that really do keep coming back to the face-to-face thing, I think a lot of times, like, sort of learn to kind of, you know, I don't know if life skills seems wrong, but, like, you know, you learn sort of how to manage that extra baggage in sort of like a game environment.
Right.
And if you have no interest in that, you have no interest in that, and you can probably still have fun playing face-to-face.
Yeah.
Honestly, I mean, I think there are people that come to tournaments and kind of have the same approach every time. They just that like they just want
to
sit down at every board and have it be fresh, and they don't care who stabbed who, and they don't care what their history with someone is. And you can actually have some. I mean, I can name some good players that sort of. Like, I feel like Eddie Bresson, honestly.
Well, then I can't remember anymore, right? He's played 1,000 games, right? I mean, he's like, I don't know. I might have. Who cares? You know, you get to a certain. You know, you play the game for 40, 50 years, like...
I feel like Eddie remembers what he did to you in previous games and whether that's going to matter to him.
Yeah.
But honestly, if it were up to him and he played every game with 6 strangers or even the same people every time, I feel like he'd try and start it fresh every time. He's just one of those people. It's like, it's not as important to him. The only thing he keeps track of is, oh God, did I stab that guy last time? And if so, what do I have to do?
I mean, like, immediately yesterday.
Yeah,
exactly. that's about it. Not like last month, not last year, just like yesterday. That's about it. But I think, you know, what's cool about this, and you know what I want to respond to, what triggers a reaction from me is because when Mark is talking about this buddy system, it's being talked about in a way like it's a an issue with the game, or like it's definitely being approached like it's a critique. And I think that's why I react to it a little bit like, oh no, we're not a buddy system. But now that I think about it, it's like it is the game.
Right.
I mean, it is the game. It's not like, oh, this is the problem with it. It's like, no, that's it.
It's a debate that rages all the time. It's something that we talk about at tournaments over drinks afterwards. It's something that everybody has a different opinion about. My personal opinion about it is that it's part of the game. But having said that, if there's one thing that we all love more than anything else, it's people who come out to a face-to-face tournament. They don't know anybody. Maybe they get their butts kicked. Maybe they don't.
Yeah.
But they like it. They come back. You get to know people, and people get to know you
right.
at these things after a while. After you've been to a couple of them, you go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you don't
There's
have to know all the ins and outs of exactly who knows who and who does what, but you do sort of learn how to deal with the same people, and that's when it starts. That's when it gets more fun.
Right.
And I, for my part, and maybe it's just because I'm like Nathan, I'm like the natural extrovert character. That was the thing about tournaments that made me go, oh, yeah. I want to figure this out. Like, and after, you know, Nathan and his buddy, like, just wiped me off a board, like, as so fast it made my head spin.
Was that Dragonflight?
Yeah, that one with when I was like turkey and I was out in 03 and it was bad. And then I went to bed and came back and you'd stayed up all night soloing that game. But anyway.
Oh, yeah, that was a great game.
Yeah, you remember that? I was so dead by 03 and they didn't even know I was there. Like, they'd for long since forgotten I was on that board kind of thing. And I left that board going, ugh. How did they do that? And then realizing sort of like, oh, okay, well, Nathan knew Jeff. They were allies, and they were kind of the ones that did me together. Okay, that's sort of the kind of thing I need to be wise to next time. Now, next time, I have to figure out a way to, like, not just those specific guys, but if I kind of get that feeling.
Right.
If I'm like, wait a minute, this guy and that guy know each other. If I get that feeling, what's the counter move? Right. How do you split those guys apart?
Yeah, sometimes you can't, but it's fun trying.
Yeah, exactly, and that makes your game better.
And I guess I don't mind losing that much.
Yeah,
so that's another part of it. Like, I think you have to be comfortable with that, and it's not. It's one of those games where, and I think this might be what Mark wants. Mark wants to say, I'm good at this. I should, you know, I want to get an equal playing field and get rid of all the distractions. So I know I can clearly evaluate my performance.
Yeah.
But especially tournament diplomacy, it's not about winning every time.
Yeah.
You're going to lose. The game is much bigger.
It's like tournament poker. You can be the best poker player in the world, show up and get dealt deuce seven every hand.
You know, sometimes
and eventually just get wiped out.
No pun intended. Luck of the draw.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So sometimes it is that, and there are games that you're just gonna lose.
Yep.
You know, they
yeah, and you sometimes just sit down at the table and you go, whoops, one of those boards. Yeah. Like, I have definitely sat down and gone, wow, I'm dead.
Yeah.
Like, not even, no one has talked yet. No
yeah.
one has even,
oh, yeah,
the timer
yeah, yeah.
has not even clicked a second.
Yeah.
And you sit down, you don't even walk to the table, you hear the board call, and you're like, and I'm dead.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well said.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, that's just, you just know. You're like, oh, but that cast of characters, with where I'm sitting and how they're arranged, oh, this is going to be a fight. But sometimes those are great games.
They're fun.
Because you know you're going down and you're going to fight tooth and nail and make it as miserable as possible and try all the crazy crap you don't usually do.
You do a weird opening. You just
blow up the game.
Totally. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You blow up the game and every once in a while you benefit from it.
Yeah,
and
it's good.
And the, yeah. So, okay.
We have talked a lot.
Yeah. There's one more anecdote.
Oh, okay. Okay.
No, it hurts. I can't. Well, all right.
No, we're doing it. We're doing it. You want me to read this last paragraph?
Yeah,
we're so, Mark goes on to say,
yeah.
Enough rambling about that. Here's a contrasting story, which is good. When he went up to Boston, which he talked about when he was here, he was on the final table.
Yeah.
Italy immediately won talk, swore up and down that he'd be my ally to the end of the game, never turn on me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, okay, that's a good thing, says. Well, I talked to everyone else to get a feel for what's going on. A few people tell me, hear rumors, there's a AIT, an Austria, Italy, Turkey alliance set to immediate.
I call that
it's a TIA. I mean, everybody. Yeah. Alliance set to immediately take me out of the game, much like WackCon.
Yeah.
Well, you can manage the panic that sets in. So I talked to Italy, my game-long, quote-unquote, buddy. I'm able to tell him, and I'm able to get him to spill the beans. He confirms he's coming after me. Now, if this happened at WAC, which it didn't quite happen like that, I would have been dead for sure. I'm confident of that. But at Boston, I was able to win the final table, even facing that from the start.
Yeah.
Not every aspect of how the situation turned around was under my control or skill on my part, but a few opportunities presented themselves with a bit of a clout of being, you know,
Mad Marks.
And I was able to turn the board and do well. See you guys in Seattle. And see that?
Yeah.
That right there, that's diplomacy. And that's awesome.
Yeah.
You want to feel good about something? Feel good about that. Three people decided they wanted to take Mark out, and Mark said, oh, I got it. I have a sneaking suspicion. I heard a rumor and did something about it. That's awesome. And he won the game. He topped the table.
Yeah.
I don't know how you not get a huge rush about that.
It actually reminds me of a weird way. Like, there's levels to this of, like, when you're Chris Martin.
Yeah.
Remember Chris telling us his story about doing the Yorkshire pudding in the very first episode of this? He just kind of wanted to do it because he knows that people always react to the fact that he's Chris Martin, and he just, for the heck of it, he just wanted to open all of his units to Yorkshire just because he's us. Chris Martin. And that, I mean, that's like the next level. Nobody's at that level. But, I mean, a few people are at that level where you actually have to, like, deliberately shoot yourself in the foot just so you can play a fair game.
Right, and that's what I was saying earlier, right? Like, those are the kind of games you have to do something wacky just to, like, survive.
It's all part of the mess.
Yeah, it's all part of the mess.
Yeah.
Mark, I gotta commend you on that top board. That is awesome. And that's why I like diplomacy. Right there. So I hope you got a bit of the bug because you are coming back to WAC. So maybe it bit you a little bit. But that rush of being able to face a bunch of people who want to take you out and to convince them to do something else, are you kidding me? That's awesome.
Yeah, it really is.
That's such a good feeling. So I already said that like three times. So obviously I'm rambling a little bit. I had a really fun. This was a good mailbag.
Yeah, I know. Mailbag. I'm all about the mailbag.
You know, I think, guys, we're not going to do all of these all the time, but the more stuff you send us, the more material we'll have, and it just sparks conversation. You know, it's hard for us sometimes to just sit around and come up with programming ideas, although we have a couple in the works.
Yeah, there may be some post-WAC or other coming up.
We'll definitely do something after WAC. We got some other stuff coming up, but definitely this I really enjoyed this. So if you can send more emails so that Eric can go through them and then pick out the ones, and I can just come up and talk. Would be fantastic.
Yeah, no problem. I'll do all the work.
I'm splitting this. All the revenues, like 60-40.
Yeah, that's a good point. There is even more good news, though.
What?
We're not done.
Yes!
We got an interview.
Oh, my golly gosh, I forgot about that. Oh, Melissa's coming. This is going to be great.
Coming up right after this. Joining us now via Skype, all the way from Melbourne, Australia.
I think that's a record.
I suppose it is. Yeah. We had a guy from New Zealand, but Melbourne, Australia.
A little further.
Just that one little bit up. a person that we knew from her tournament organizing and sort of tournament involvement in Boston, but now she's down in Australia and you know, stirring it up down there, as we might expect. Welcome to the show, Melissa Call. How are you?
Hi, I'm great, thanks.
Let's see. Where do we start here? I guess maybe let's start in Boston.
Let's start with what we know.
Start with what we do know, and then move on to what we don't. You were...
Well, there was no hobby at all, really, in Boston back in the day.
I think there was some pockets of diplomacy that were being played. There was a diplomatic incident that I think was run every 6 months or so from a lot of the sort of older players that were, I think, had sort of started their families and things, so that was sort of dying down, and then there was a sort of a small university group that had sort of started up.
So
I sort of got put in touch with Jim Burgess, who was quite instrumental there, and sort of decided to start an email list where we could all sort of get these people that were all from different areas to sort of join one forum where we could get games organized. So
how did you get them to do that?
Well, I started it.
Okay. So, and then you just show up at events and tell people about it and
yeah, okay. Exactly.
Cool. And what year is this around? What year are we talking?
That's the end of 2001, beginning of 2002.
Okay.
There's a lot of, getting together at that time, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
everybody was very... Yeah. The world was a more communal place.
Yeah.
Tragedy behind us.
You gotta love it. No,
Well, yeah. I did land on American soil on September the 11th, 2001, so...
Oh, my God.
Wow.
It was a very interesting time.
Wow. I did not know
At
that.
Least your flight wasn't scheduled for September 12th.
Yeah, you know.
Never would have gotten here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There you go. That's a very positive outlook.
Thanks.
Like that.
I'm
like
Mr. Positivity.
So you got everybody on this on the list, and over the next couple of years, the Boston Massacres just sort of grew. I remember seeing it when it started, and then suddenly it was sort of big enough that it was being considered for DipCons and like other large regional events.
Yeah. So I think what I wanted to start a tournament that was a little bit more in the style of what I was used to in New Zealand, and so. In New Zealand, we played tournaments with a central clock, with drop-dead deadlines, and I found the time that everybody was taking to write orders kind of, it made games last a very long time, so I wanted to have a clock, and I wanted to introduce supply center-based scoring that everybody at that stage, that I'd seen at least, was using a draw-based approach. And so because that's what I wanted, I thought, well, I'll organize it. And then that's what we can have a tournament in Boston just like that. But of course, the irony is if you organize it, you really get to play.
Right. Exactly.
But so I guess my approach was to sort of grow, try and get games sort of going in the area. And get sort of like a cohesive group of contacts, if you like.
Yeah.
And then I think I went to Baltimore to the tournament down there to meet sort of all the DC guys, yeah. All the Pittances and stuff, and sort of make friends with a few of the sort of the Northeast hobbies, if you like, and asked a few people what they thought about it. And then I think I went to WDC in... was it Colorado?
Yeah, in Denver.
Denver, yeah. And you know, sort of talked through it a bit and then decided, okay, so now I've met all the people around, because I think you really do need travelers to sort of come in and make a tournament good. Then I can start making plans and getting venues and things like that. So that's kind of how it started, and it was, I think we had more than 30 players the first couple of years, so that was really good.
So, so your approach was really, really focused on just getting the locals initially, and then you figured, you know, go out.
Yeah.
Once you had something in place, go out and kind of tell other people about it and try and bring people in.
So, yeah, and see, you know, what the reception's going to be, because it was very different at that time to have a central clock where all the boards are being run on the same.
Right. And so it probably got a kind of reputation as the Boston style of playing because of that, I imagine.
Maybe. Is that what it is? It doesn't have that reputation.
There's a little bit of that.
I don't know if the West Coast was using a central clock at that time or not.
No, actually, you're...
East Coast.
Boston really started moving people towards the central clock. That and Denver, the two things are that central clock and the supply center.
Yeah,
they did. They did. And then you both had sort of a supply center based approach. And most of the country at that time was very draw based. And now they've really shifted the other way. Most of the U.S. is a supply center based variable.
Somewhere in between.
Somewhere in between. Yeah. But draw based things that back in the early 2000s, that's just pretty much gone.
Yeah.
Mm.
So interesting stuff. How you your impact on U.S. US hobby?
Yeah, maybe. I guess I never really went for the draw based approach, just because I think that you see most solos when there's lots of people on the board fighting each other. So it seems kind of
right
counterproductive to to kill everybody off if you're going for a solo. You kind of you need those little guys.
Yeah,
exactly.
On headhunting. Is that? I mean, so you say that that was how you did it in New Zealand, and I know that that's often how they do it in Europe, to have just a pure, you know, each supply center is a point type scoring system.
They play league based a lot more in Europe, so C Diplom, especially the French, and variations of it, I think, like squares and things.
They love it.
Yeah.
So it's not really the number of supply centers you have. It's just how many more you have than
more
the next
than
person.
You have. Mm-hmm.
So everybody can have four. If the person has five.
Yeah. At the time, I remember summarizing it as like, you know, the New Zealanders and the Australians just want to be the best that they can be, and the Europe, they just wanted to be ahead of everybody else,
right.
And the Americans wanted to kill as many people as possible.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Well done.
That's how we do it. I like it.
Do you want to take a minute or two on sort of some differences you've noticed in the way people play in the different systems? I don't know that we've talked much about that on this show. I think we all have our own opinions, but I'd love to hear it from somebody who's played in all three.
Well, I think what I just was saying before kind of embodied it a bit. I think the lead-based approach, when you have a scoring system that's based on that, then it sort of encourages people to one dot, and stalemate lines are less important, and it's more about position and jockeying and sort of pushing people down. Whereas, I think the supply center-based scoring, it encourages more alliance play. So I think that's, some people don't like to play that way. They, you know, the Care Bears and everything.
Yeah.
It tends to have a negative reputation. I prefer that style of play myself. I have the most fun on a diplomacy board when I'm working with somebody.
Yeah. For a long-term
rather than
thing.
Trying to manipulate everybody on the board.
And I've heard that the European approach is much more, they really don't remember what happened last season. They just sort of reboot every season.
I played one tournament in Ireland, the European DipCon, early on. That was kind of interesting. I booked a flight to Boston, but it was more expensive to buy a ticket to Boston and stay there than it was to get a return ticket to Europe.
Wow.
So I had a free segment to Europe that I was using to save money, basically. So to a tournament in Ireland.
So you figured you may as well play some diplomacy while you're there, huh?
I know. Yeah. I was like, well, what am I going to do for a weekend all by myself? So.
Right.
Diplomacy is the answer. So do you? I know you recently went to Worlds, which was last October, I think, down in.
Yes.
I'm not sure which city it was in.
In Sydney.
Oh, it was in Sydney.
Yeah.
Do you? I don't know how often you're playing down there, but is it the same sort of play style, and has anything changed over the last 10 years or so, or is it pretty much as you expected?
The people have changed, I think. When I left, I think Australia and New Zealand were, the hobby was shrinking, if you like. There's still a few familiar faces out there, but there's a lot more new people that have come in. The hobby could do with some injection of people that recruit other players, I think. Thorin's done a great job in the lead up to Worlds, and I think that he's really sort of grown the hobby quite a bit with his enthusiasm. He started an online tournament, essentially, I think, that runs through the year.
And so
I think that that's been really positive. But I think, you know, the World DipCon's been this big culmination. So I think that he's now that he's done that, I think he's looking for some people to start to take over a little bit more.
Sure.
Yeah, that'll happen.
I know. I mean, it's such a massive job. He's done so well.
We actually haven't got much of a tournament report from that Worlds tournament. I mean, we heard winner, and that's basically all we've heard. How was it?
Yeah, it was really nice. So they had booked out this Coogee Bay hotel. They had a couple of rooms. A room upstairs from the bar that was over a balcony.
Nice.
Thorin had it all kitted out with army style decorations and things like that.
Oh, nice.
um, We had a friend. We got a few travellers coming from the US. We didn't see any Europeans, which was unfortunate.
Interesting.
I'm guessing the numbers are around 40 or so. So, I mean, it would have been nicer to have a lot more players, but when you consider that, you know, the Australia and New Zealand are, you know, the closest countries are like 10-hour plus flights.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a 30-hour flight from the 30 hours traveling at least from the US and Europe. So.
But come on, Europeans, step up. Yeah, you guys get like 4 months of vacation a year. What's the deal?
They got one of the Australians to pitch the French bid.
Oh,
wow.
We had a bit of fun for the awarding the French the next world.com.
Not much of a competing bid, I take it.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough.
Somebody offered it to have it at their house and do nothing. So that was the competing bid.
Right.
Well, that's interesting that no Europeans came.
Yeah.
I know. They usually do, is my understanding.
They do usually do, yeah. So yeah. I don't know why. It might have been just the time of the year. Or...
Did you have any good results?
Me? I think I was in the middle of the road. I have trouble remembering my diplomacy game, so even the next day, so October's a long time ago, but I think I got eliminated out of one.
Yeah.
I can't remember who did it though. But I don't like being eliminated.
And that's why it sticks out.
Very grumpy.
So are you playing other than the world, are you playing a lot down there or is work keeping you busy?
Work keeps me really busy, so I'm just starting me and my husband are starting a lab together.
Oh, nice.
We're the lab heads, and this is our first independent position where we get to direct the course of the research, and so that really does keep us very busy.
Slightly, yeah.
Yeah. I think when you're sort of young and single, is the best time to be getting involved in diplomacy and recruiting people and organising tournaments and things. I did organise one tournament. I think the Victoria Diplomacy Champs here. They needed somebody to run it, so I think I got a couple of boards.
Oh, nice.
Which was nice. But the previous Victorian DipCon, I think, had like 50 people plus, I think, but that was because Tristan Lee, who's now moved to China, unfortunately, was really instrumental in sort of hosting a joint board game diplomacy tournament, and so he got a lot of board gamers that came in and then would also be playing, would also, some of them played diplomacy as well, so that was a really good construct, but I don't play any other board games except for diplomacy.
Yeah.
I know how that is. That the same way.
Yeah.
Junkies.
When you're, it sounds like you still make some effort, or at least definitely when you were organizing more, you made an effort to kind of bring the game to new people and do some kind of outreach stuff.
Yeah.
Do you find it easy or hard to kind of play with new players and pull your punches a little bit and kind of teach people as you're teaching people the game, or is that something that you're real?
No, I find that pretty easy.
Yeah.
I really like to work with somebody. So with the new players, they're sort of my favourite alliance partner because I can be talking to them about, you know, what we should do to grow, and you know, as long as they're receptive to that, then I've had some fantastic games with those very new players.
Yeah.
I don't like stabbing at the best of times. So I think if the new player's attacking me, then I don't really pull any punches.
Right. Right.
But,
love when you do that. It makes it easy.
With new players.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Did you have something?
Well, no, I didn't. I was gonna. You are our first. I think she's the first female guest we've had.
Yep.
So just any perspective. You get to throw the first. You know, give us the first perspective on being a woman that has played diplomacy and how that all works. I know we, you know, several other female players who, everyone has their spiel on it, and I'm sure we'll get some other ladies on in the next couple of months, but I wanted to just get your perspective on it.
So, I mean, I think the biggest thing for me is that it makes you kind of instantly recognizable, right? So
right.
when you go to tournaments, lots of people know who you are, even if you maybe don't know them or you... And I think it's just because, you know, it's you're the female. You're the only female at a tournament, yep. usually. I haven't really experienced anything negative about it. One thing that's quite useful is when you overhear people talking across the room, when you can hear them say she, you know that.
God, you know that never even occurred to me.
Wow, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
Oh, see, this is all for us. We need to adjust our play.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the tournament in Seattle as a woman. I've decided. So.
Well, no, I'm always curious because there's definitely people that have. You're like, oh, this is if a woman is playing, then there's some chivalry out there. There's some guys that don't like to attack. There's other ones
maybe,
who.
I'd hope not, but maybe I don't know.
If it doesn't sound like it's standing out to you, so yeah, no, that's good. I'd rather that wasn't, you know, you go to a tournament and go, oh man, now I'm gonna have to fight my way to get heard because no one wants to listen to me or something like that. And I've definitely heard that.
I really don't think so. I don't see anything. I mean, I think that diplomacy is like an all-consuming game, really. And yeah. So, you know, the rest of the world kind of stops when you're on a diplomacy board, and you know how the pieces are interacting sort of becomes the only focus. And I think. You know, as long as you, I think it, with any player, as long as when you're on a diplomacy board, you feel that the people have an understanding of how it's working, then really they just become England and France and
right.
Germany.
I agree. It might stand out in spring 1901, but by fall 1904, you've forgotten who's who. You're just, yeah.
Exactly.
It's ally, enemy. Yeah, exactly. One more on that, and then we'll move on to something different. Do you have any... theory, any speculation on why you think that it's still a pretty male-dominated hobby?
I think it's just the nature of the game.
Yeah.
I think because, you know, it's a competitive game, and people get, you know, eliminated from the game.
Yeah.
And I love that about it, but I think 99% of the world would not like to play a diplomacy game.
Yeah.
So, because it's kind of brutal and emotional. I think. You know, I've seen grown men cry over a diplomacy war.
Yes,
sure.
Yeah, we all have.
So I think, you know, maybe women on a whole are more likely to want to have more constructive yeah. types of. Hobbies.
Something like, there's less tears.
Yeah, right.
No, I don't. For some
few
reason.
Less tears. Yeah, exactly. I agree. I mean, I think I've always said that I've taught a lot of female players to play the game, like a lot, and I feel like not that many of them come back to it. Some do, and some love it. Not that many come back, and I think. When you ask why, a lot of them just say, like, I just don't care enough. You have to work so hard for, like, so long just to get the little wooden block to go 2 inches on the board. A lot of people just, you know, men and women, but apparently especially women at some point are just like, yeah, I don't, whatever. Like, it can go or not go. And in this game, you have to just really want that little block to go. So, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, and that's what my husband will never play diplomacy because he really just doesn't care.
Right.
He's like, why are you wasting 12 hours doing this?
Oh, no, he doesn't really understand why I play, but he's supportive of it.
Right.
That's good.
But he will never play himself.
Right. All of our significant others are pretty much the same way.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
You get, no.
Have fun.
Yeah, have a great time.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. Some final thoughts?
Something to tell any burgeoning diplomacy organizer, or just anything that you would want to say to our vast audience.
Vast. I think as an organizer, you know, I think you've got to realize, I think at some point, that you can't maintain it all of the time, or in for, you know, more than 5 years, more than 10 years, you know, your life. changes and you get more busy with other things. So I think it's always maybe good to have an eye on who's going to take over next after you.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, prep somebody for that role. But I think that's kind of, I think that out of the population of the diplomacy players, it's rare to have that individual that that is really the recruiter, if you like. So I think as a hobby, we've got to find more people with that energy that bring more people in all of the time.
It seems like our show is starting to find them one by one. We get emails from time to time from people saying, "I listened to your show," and that's part of why we wanted to ask you about, you know, all of your recruiting and organizing efforts, is because we're getting these emails saying, "I listened to your show and I want to start it up in Bowling Green, Kentucky," or whatever. And
exactly.
So that's kind of what we're hoping to accomplish.
Yeah, it's a lot of time emailing people.
And
you learn pretty rapidly that yes definitely means that they're most likely to show up,
right?
And maybe means no.
Exactly. Maybe means no.
No.
Do you have any, I mean, if there are people listening in Australia, is particularly in Melbourne area, is there resources for them to find you guys that have a house game every once in a while, or?
So where I'd start in Australia and New Zealand would be the DANZ, the DAANZ.org.au website, and that gives you links to the mailing list that's joint between Australia and New Zealand, and then that's a place that you can post if you're playing games.
Perfect.
So at the moment it's very quiet.
Well, then get on there and start some stuff, Australia.
But
New Zealand,
all
people.
You need to do is host a game and see who turns up.
Yep,
right. And that's the thing for the radio, our radio audience out there. You just have to like put yourself out there, even if you only get five people. You know. Yeah. Futz around, but like people need to see that something's going to happen, just doing it a couple of times, even if they are quote unquote failures or like not optimal, just go ahead and do them because that you need to start a momentum.
Yeah, actually, there's a high school crowd that had about 35 players for one of their games, so we're kind of keen to hear from them. So
why doesn't that happen anywhere in the U.S.?
Maybe it does.
We just haven't found them yet. All right. Thank you so much for your time, Melissa. We really appreciate it.
Whoa. Last question.
Oh, Nathan's got another question.
Question. Right. No, it's the question.
Oh, all right.
So, Melissa, we have to ask you, and it's okay if you don't have an answer. But we always close out an interview with the same question, which is, what is your biggest diplomacy mistake? This could be on board, off board, anything related to diplomacy.
I think my biggest diplomacy mistake is that I've never soloed.
Oh.
See? That's not a mistake. That's
a lifestyle choice.
And no, that's a continuing...
It's kind of the reason for playing, isn't it? So.
Well, it sounds to me like you have more playing to do as well. That's what it sounds like.
Except unless you're, who was that guy who had never soloed and won the Grand Prix that year? Just because he never gets eliminated either. Is that kind of your style?
I try not to get eliminated, and I'm usually fairly successful in that.
Yeah.
Well, I've never soloed.
That's all right. Well, I hope we do see you around at some point once you in the next couple of years. Maybe you'll have some time to come either to the States, or we'll see you at a WDC or something. It's always a pleasure.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Okay. Bye.
That was fun.
You have been listening to Diplomacy Cast. For Nathan Barnes, I'm Eric Mead.
For Eric Mead, I am a garden gnome.
You understand that I'm not like trying to trade you for me or something when I say that. It's just, honestly, I don't know why people say that. It's just what they say at the end of radio shows. Goodbye.